When Prince William and Catherine Middleton bowed before Queen Elizabeth II at their 2011 wedding, her almost imperceptible nod captured the essence of her reign, subtle yet powerful. This same woman had once fallen for 18-year-old Prince Philip at 13, defying her mother's wishes. Her story has captured not just Britain, but the world, with admirers ranging from Helen Mirren to J.K. Rowling. Tony Blair aptly called her a symbol of unity in a world of insecurity. With her straightforward nature, unfailing sense of duty, and surprising wit, Elizabeth II has dominated the monarchy alongside Queen Victoria for 123 of 174 years, a testament to her extraordinary resilience. Her influence extends far beyond her constitutional role. She has become the embodiment of continuity in an age of constant change, a living link between Britain's past and its evolving future. Young Elizabeth's early education centered on Commonwealth knowledge, an unexpected but vital foundation for her future role. When her uncle Edward VIII's abdication made her father king, her studies intensified under Sir Henry Martin of Eton College. For 6 years, she immersed herself in constitutional texts, developing expertise that would later impress prime ministers. World War II transformed her youth. While at Windsor Castle, she witnessed her parents' courage as they remained at Buckingham Palace despite 9 direct bomb hits. At 18, she served as second subaltern Elizabeth Windsor at the Mechanical Transport Training Center, learning to drive trucks and repair engines, later admitting, "I've never worked so hard in my life." On Victory in Europe Day, she and Margaret joined the celebrating crowds incognito, dancing through London streets. Her diary captured the moment. Out in crowd again, Embankment, Piccadilly, Pall Mall, walked simply miles, saw parents on balcony at 12:30 a.m., ate, partied, bed, 3 a.m. Lady Anne Glenconner observed that Elizabeth chose Prince Philip early, despite palace courtiers' wariness of the penniless foreigner. Philip emerged resilient from a troubled childhood, an institutionalized mother, an absent father, becoming what educator Kurt Hahn deemed a born leader. Though handsome and athletic, his early emotional deprivation left lasting marks. Their story began in 1939 at the Royal Naval College, where 13-year-old Elizabeth was instantly smitten. Their romance flourished through 1943, culminating in Philip's 1946 Balmoral proposal, which Elizabeth accepted independently. In Malta, they found precious normalcy, Philip serving in the Navy while Elizabeth enjoyed unprecedented freedom managing her own life. This respite ended with King George VI's failing health, compelling Elizabeth's return to England and Philip's naval career sacrifice. Learning of King George VI's death in Kenya, February 1952, Elizabeth embraced her destiny at 25. The June 1953 coronation saw her don the golden robes and St. Edward's crown, while Philip pledged fealty and Princess Margaret mourned the loss of both father and sister to the crown. The Queen adhered to a strict daily routine, beginning at 7:30 a.m. with Earl Grey tea and newspapers, followed by a Scottish bagpiper at 9 a.m. By 10 a.m., she was reviewing official documents in red dispatch boxes, a duty she performed daily except Christmas and Easter. Her staff commended her accessibility and efficiency. She held private audiences in a ground floor sitting room, valuing these meetings as my way of meeting people without anybody else listening. During investiture ceremonies, she personally honored over 404,500 individuals, believing that people need pats on the back sometimes. It's a very dingy world otherwise. Philip struggled to adapt to his role, lacking the official duties granted to Prince Albert before him. His greatest frustration was being denied the right to give his name to the royal house. "I am the only man in the country not allowed to give his name to his children. I'm nothing but a bloody amoeba." Early in her reign, Elizabeth maintained a formal public image, following Queen Mary's advice to limit smiling. The Queen Mother, meanwhile, embraced her role as National Grandmother, remaining a close confidant to Elizabeth, the two speaking almost daily about horses, racing, and family matters.
The Queen's reign witnessed Britain's transformation from imperial power to modern nation-state. Harold Wilson's Labour government enacted major reforms, abolishing capital punishment, ending censorship, liberalizing social laws, and decriminalizing homosexuality. During their Tuesday audiences, the Queen's probing questions helped Wilson sharpen his positions. He shared political insights and trusted her discretion with cabinet matters. The 1953 coronation merged ancient tradition with solemn ceremony. After anointing, Elizabeth wore 36-pound golden robes and received St. Edward's crown. Prince Philip knelt in homage as her liege man of life and limb before kissing her cheek. Horses provided Elizabeth both passion and refuge. Unlike her constitutional role, she exercised direct authority in equestrian matters, drawing on deep expertise. She evaluated horses meticulously and maintained close relationships with stable staff, discussing both equine and personal matters. The 1980s and 1990s brought unprecedented challenges as the Queen's children's marriages crumbled. While Charles and Diana's wedding captivated the world, problems surfaced quickly. Diana's struggle with palace life and open disdain for royal traditions at Balmoral shocked the Queen. Diana's 1997 death became a defining crisis. The Queen's decision to stay at Balmoral with her grieving grandsons sparked public outrage. Following Tony Blair's advice, she returned to London and delivered a television address praising Diana as an exceptional and gifted human being, while acknowledging needed changes. Her bow to Diana's coffin symbolized reconciliation between monarchy and public. The 2002 Golden Jubilee marked renewal. After losing Princess Margaret and the Queen Mother, Elizabeth emerged as family matriarch. Millions celebrated her 50-year reign, with former press secretary Charles Anson noting, "People realized Her Majesty represented stability, serenity, continuity, calm through adversity, and humor in difficult times." Elizabeth II has maintained an unwavering commitment to duty, firmly rejecting abdication due to her coronation oath. When Archbishop Carey mentioned retirement in 2003, she stated simply, "That's something I can't do. I am going to carry on to the end." Her inscrutability and measured approach have served as the sheet anchor in the middle for people to hang on to in times of turbulence. Through frequent visits across Britain and deep Commonwealth connections, she gained unparalleled understanding of her realms. Post-Jubilee, the Queen revealed a warmer public persona while modernizing the monarchy. By her Diamond Jubilee in 2012, she had firmly re-established the crown's place in British life, with her reputation reaching new heights. The Queen's greatest achievement has been maintaining the monarchy's relevance in a democratic age, adapting to change while preserving essential traditions. As Tony Blair observed after Diana's death, he witnessed the Queen's wisdom at work, reflecting, considering, and adjusting. In her Diamond Jubilee message, Elizabeth II renewed her age 21 pledge, "I dedicate myself anew to your service." This dedication, sustained through 7 decades, transformed a reluctant heir into one of history's most beloved monarchs, proving that true greatness lies not in the crown itself, but in the steadfast heart that bears its weight.